Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Yeah, it's Monday morning, and that means the Monday morning movie reviews will begin. Eric and Colin are going to join me in just a couple of seconds here to talk about the new movies, and Eric and I will talk about the box office. And we're going to play catch-up, too, because I was off last Monday morning taking the Oscars off, so we're going to talk a little bit about their thoughts on the Oscars and talk about some of the movies that came out last week before we get to the new ones for this week. My dad will call in and tell a joke later on because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about long movies that are worth watching, like great long movies. So we'll get to that in a little bit. I think everybody knows which one I'm going to talk about right out of the gate, I think. So all that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and more join me every week to talk about the movies. And here's Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Well, let's start with Eric. What were your thoughts since we were off last week? What were your thoughts on the Oscars and obviously the last 10 minutes of the Oscars?
Well, it was kind of funny because I was out in Colorado visiting my sister and her kids. And so I was an hour and a half behind everyone else watching the Oscars last week. So I didn't get to join in on the parade of social media on what was going on.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, we fast forwarding through commercials and stuff like that. But I thought it was a good show. What was the final tally on it? Like 3.5 hours, something like
it
that?
It was over 3.5 hours. It was long.
It didn't feel like it.
I felt the same way, Eric. I felt the same exact way, and I watched it live. It was a show that was very, very long, but it never felt long.
Yeah, and Kimmel, I'm sure he had stuff written for him clearly, but it didn't feel like it. It felt like he was just up there inserting jokes when there needed to be jokes. The him and the Damon stuff is always killer.
Yeah.
There was just a very breezy show, and I didn't have really any complaints about a lot of the winners. I mean, there was very little to get outraged about, and that probably helped help the things along. And then the ending, what can be said that hasn't been said already about it?
Yeah, it was just, I had to get my jaw off the floor. I was just, is this really happening?
Yeah.
But I agree with you about everything you said about the show. I thought the show was great. I thought Kimmel did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little sense of disappointment that Kubo didn't win, but we kind of knew that going in.
Yeah, but even then, I wasn't upset that Zootopia won.
No, I know. Zootopia is a good movie. It's just that I just have a deep love for Kubo.
Of course.
Now, Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, I think this is the best Oscar telecast in a long, long time. But for the reason that Eric just said, having a host like Kimmel, he was clearly in his element. You know, it's not like they just got somebody who's never done this kind of thing before. Well, he's never really hosted an award show before, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did a great job, and I'd love to have him back next year. And I hope they do bring him back, because it was nothing to do with like who won or who didn't win. I mean, the people who won that I was disappointed in actually at least went up there and gave great speeches, And even the Suicide Squad people went up there and went and gave a really good speech. I was like, well, okay, I guess that's all right.
Yeah.
They're good people. They just made a crappy movie. On that level, it worked. I thought it was a terrific telecast.
Yeah, and again, the ending, Colin. What was going through your mind during that?
Well, yeah, I was at an Oscar party, and it was all just all right, everybody, quiet. It's just stop talking. Just shut up. What is happening? We're all just kind of like gasping, like what here we are. We're watching this moment that is going to be, a big part of Oscar history. It's because they're going to have so many jokes about it next week, next year. So it was crazy, but you know what? It was a mistake. It's no conspiracy to it. Some of the think pieces that are coming out from it are just ridiculous. This is why we watch these shows, for that kind of live, you know, craziness.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the thing about live TV. I mean, that was one of the most sort of mesmerizing live TV moments that I've seen, and that's one of the many reasons why people watch these. It's one of the reasons why I watch the Oscars. You never know what people are going to say. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what they're going to do. And it was that kind of a payoff.
I mean, it is kind of a shame that that moment kind of marred the 3.5 hours that came before it, because, like we all just said, it was a very funny show. It was a breezy show. Kimmel was great. There was a lot of really good laughs. Some of the changes they made to the format worked really well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that ending, it almost seems perfect, perfectly suited for La La Land.
Yeah.
Considering the way that movie ends.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, I talked about this last week, on At Midnight the following night, they, of course, you know, did a bit about it, and Hardwick said, Hardwick was like, okay, you know, they made a bit out of it, and Hardwick said, but could you imagine if it were the other way around?
Yeah.
Could you imagine if they awarded it to Moonlight, and then they said, oh, no, sorry, La La Land was the winner. And he said, yeah, it's like, sorry, you guys, we're going to give it to the white people. And then he says, I imagine Tom Brady walking up on stage for the acceptance speech with a big jar of mayonnaise. And I just thought it was my favorite joke of the whole thing. So it could have been a lot worse. It could have been the other way around. And,
yeah. That whole dynamic was.
Yeah.
I mean, even when, you know, going back to, like, Toronto and when the La La Land Moonlight kind of started their run towards this moment,
yeah,
4 or 5 months ago, it was always this, like, is it going to be the white dreamers or the small budget black film that takes the Oscar? And of course, everyone had their money on La La Land, even though there was a little bit more going for Moonlight in some respects. So, but then you get to that moment where Horowitz is up there, and he corrects the entire thing, and then definitively corrects the entire thing. And then there, you know, you got Chazelle and Jenkins on the cover of Variety the next morning, and, you know, giving interviews and stuff. There was something, and there was a lot of positivity that came out of that moment.
Yeah, no, they handled it. I mean, Horowitz handled it really well, I thought. A lot of people weren't happy about him yanking the card out of Beatty's hands, but, you know,
no, he was trying to put the button on it. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't either.
The guy who said, oh yeah, by the way, we lost.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that guy.
Yeah. But it's what's funny is the press conference that Emma Stone held right after that was great. And, you know, because she didn't get to do a press conference for her win because it happened like 2 seconds after, you know. So she goes back there, and they're like, well, how do you feel about this? Because someone finally asks her the question, how do you feel about what just happened? And she's like, well, you know, I effing love Moonlight. It's a great movie. So I thought that was pretty, you know, it was really clear that, like you said, Eric, that, you know, these two movies have been sort of tied together now for all this time.
Yeah.
And they've gone through the film festival circuits. They've gone through the, you know, the Critics Circle Awards and all this other stuff. And it seemed like they all liked each other, and they all, you know, respected one another's films. And I thought that was pretty great too. So yeah, overall, I would love to see Kimmel come back. You know, there were some bits in there that just were hilarious. The We Bought a Zoo bit.
He had Adam Carolla was one of his writers back there. He's been talking on his podcast all week about what it was like back there, and like they had fights over like what candy is going to drop from the ceiling. You know, everyone's like, nobody likes snow caps, dude.
Right.
They agonized over that.
That's funny.
Know? And what movie met what Matt Damon movie they were going to do?
Yeah.
And then backstage, like towards the end of the show, like before Kimmel, you know, before they read Best Picture, and I'm like, you know, man, this is the best party. All you got to do is say goodnight. It's all over.
That's pretty great. All right, had to get your thoughts on the Oscars since we were off last week, guys. Hang on, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, we got a little catch up to do again after we take a break for the news, and then all the new movies and the box office right here on 720 WGN. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Nick DiGilio and news is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Monday morning. Monday morning movie reviews are coming up. We're going to talk about great long movies that are worth your time. My dad's going to tell a joke because it's jokey time. And as you hear, it is the Monday morning movie reviews that are happening right now. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Eric Childress, Colin Suter joined me every week to talk about the movies. We were off last week for the Oscars, but we do want to touch on a movie that opened last week. Eric, Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Colin, why don't you, we'll recap, but tell everybody about Get Out.
All right. Well, this is the horror, thriller, comedy, and directorial debut from Jordan Peele, half of the Key and Peele comedy duo. And it's an average black guy, played by Daniel Kaluuya, is dating a white girl, played by Allison Williams, and he's about to meet her family. And they're a well-off family that lives in a secluded, gated community. And they immediately go out of their way to show how not racist they are. And, you know, never mind that they have a black maid and a black gardener, but there's something odd about their behavior, too. They don't act very normal. And the parents are played by Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford. And she's a psychologist who specializes in hypnotism, and he's a physician. And they have a son, played by Caleb Landry Jones, and he's pretty odd as well. Annoyingly odd, actually. So it's just basically his weekend getting to know his potential future in-laws. And that's about as far as I'm going to go with the story. Because, like I said, this is a horror thriller and at times a comedy. And you'd think, you know, it's half the comedy deep team of Key and Peele, so then it must be a comedy. Well, not really. I mean, this is a straight-up horror film that is very much in the vein of a Twilight Zone episode about racism. You know, some of the things that happen in it are actually pretty horrifying. And it constantly just leaves you guessing, leaves you on edge. It finds a very delicate balance of horror and comedy. The comedy comes from the discomfort and the odd behavior of everybody. But, of course, there's a reason for all of that odd behavior. And I think the horror comes from the people who are, you know, trying not to appear racist and how uncomfortable that can be sometimes for somebody who wasn't even thinking about that going in. And I just think there's a lot going on here that is, you know, really funny, really thought-provoking, really creepy. And this is, you know, one of the most promising directorial debuts I've seen in a long time. It's really terrific. I'm recommending it, obviously, and I'm really happy it's making a lot of money.
Yeah, it is making a lot of money, Eric. We'll talk about that in a little bit. All right, well, Eric, you talked about this one because you saw it at, where did you see it, Sundance?
Yeah, Sundance. It was the surprise secret screening there, and obviously it blew up pretty well there. And and everyone's reciprocated on it because, I mean, the reviews were insane.
Yeah.
Last week. This was 100% at Rotten Tomatoes until Armand White got to write a review.
Right.
The more I thought about the movie, I mean, first of all, I'm really glad that I didn't see the trailer before I saw the movie.
Yeah.
Because they give away a lot of stuff in the trailer. I mean, I hope that my experience wouldn't have been shuttered too much if I had seen it. Because, like Colin said, this is a very accomplished debut, and it's accomplished in a way that Peele is able to take ideas from a lot of horror and sci-fi type movies that he's seen before and sort of massage them into this hole in kind of the same way that, you know, someone like Tarantino tends to you know, steal from the best and then incorporate it into a kind of a fresh new perspective on the subject matter. I mean, you know, we don't want to name those movies too much because then we're getting into the plot. But yeah, just like, you know, he takes a dab of this and a dash of that, and he puts it into this hole, and there's almost no fat on this thing. It's paced very, very nicely. Colin said, it's a straight-up horror movie. It does have some laughs. It certainly does have a comic relief character in it.
And he's hilarious, by the way.
Yes, a TSA agent. Yeah. Very funny.
Lil Rel Howery, who you might know from the Carmichael show. He's very funny.
Yes, very funny in the movie, and very welcome comic relief at times, because like Colin said, this is a movie that does get very uncomfortable, and maybe I don't know who it's more uncomfortable for, white people or black people. And I think that's one of the charms of the movie, is that there's plenty to go around on both sides here. And, I echo everything Colin said. I was a fan of this movie at Sundance, still a fan of it today.
Yeah, I loved it, man. Well, Eric, you called that. but, I mean, this is obviously so into my wheelhouse, and you're right. What Jordan Peele does is clearly he's influenced by a lot of classic horror and sci-fi, and he took all that love and he put it into one movie, and the result is just a home run. I saw it in a packed house. And that's the way to see this movie, because like the last 20 minutes of this movie, the audience went nuts, and rightfully so, because it's just, I mean, he goes all out during the last 20 minutes of this movie, and if you see it with a nice big crowd, I was just wishing I could get into the DeLorean with this movie and bring it back to like the Woods Theater in the Loop in the 70s and watch it with a predominantly African American audience. From the 70s, where people are screaming at the screen and going, it would have just been, it's exactly the kind of crowd you want to see this movie with.
Yeah.
It's a great, I mean, when it eventually comes to Bruin View, this is a fantastic Bruin View movie. And I don't mean, to knock the quality of the film, because it's a beautifully made movie.
Yeah.
Right from the opening scene is so brilliantly shot and constructed and really scary. Like, that's the first huge jump in the movie, is that great opening scene that sets the tone, and everything in the score is great and really weird. And it really gets under your skin. And the movie is about a lot of stuff. This isn't just a stupid horror movie. This movie is about, racism, classism. It's about what it's like between whites and blacks in America today. And all while being very funny, really creepy, scary, and also very exciting and scream inducing. This is it's a great movie, and I'm so happy for Jordan Peele. This is his first film as a director, and he knocked it out of the park. And everybody in the cast is great from top to bottom. Everybody is great in this movie. And this Caleb Landry Jones guy, who I remember from Cronenberg's Sons movie.
Yeah,
this guy. I don't know where this guy came from.
he's a creep. He's a creepy creep.
Man, the dinner table scene with the jiu-jitsu stuff, the mixed martial arts that they're talking about. I was like, what the hell is happening? It was just the weirdest thing.
It might be my only small beef with the movie, just because I've seen that guy in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And he always plays that guy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So, well, he shows up and was like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, look at him. What else is he going to play? but it's a great movie. Get Out. And we don't need to like tell people to go see it, because they're going.
Oh yeah.
They're going in droves. And we'll talk about that at the box office. But I wanted to play catch up on that, because we had to talk about it. It's such a great movie. So, all right, well, let's begin with the new ones here. Colin, why don't you start with Land of Mine?
All right. Well, this was one of the nominees for Best Foreign Film last week, obviously lost to The Salesman. And it takes place at the end of World War II in Finland. I could be wrong on that.
It's Denmark. It's Denmark.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. In Denmark, where a group of young teenage Nazi soldiers who are now POWs, they're brought to a beach in Finland where they have to dig up and dismantle 1,200 landmines that are buried in the sand. I mean, there's a million of them throughout Finland, but in this particular area, there's 1,200 buried. These guys, they live in small quarters near this beach house owned by their commander, played by Roland Mueller. And, you know, he does not suffer fools and has no problem starving these kids or making them feel inferior in every way, because they were Nazis after all, and this job has to get done. So these kids have to, meet a quota. And this is not unlike a Hurt Locker situation, where they have to be very, very careful in dismantling these mines.
And as time goes on, these guys start to speak up a bit more, and the commander starts to sympathize with them a little bit and sees them as kids who really didn't know any better when they got into this war. And I think this is a very interesting story, but told in a way that is both kind of formulaic but never to the point where you're kind of rolling your eyes. I think the performances make it work more than anything else. You kind of know, you know, who's gonna not make it and who's gonna be the hero here. Some of the screenwriting is a bit cliche ridden, but there are also images in the film that are pretty hard to shake off. I think this is a really good movie about sort of that gray area with this subject of, you know, well, gee, they're, you know, these are just kids in a situation that they had really no frame of reference as to, you know, right or wrong. They're just kind of put in a uniform, given a gun and saying, okay, follow these orders. And it's the movie kind of explores that gray area, I think, pretty well. I mean, yes, a Nazi is a Nazi and, you know, don't deserve any sympathy. At the same time, you know, there's these other maybe things worth thinking about. And like I said, there's some moments in it that are pretty scary and pretty, you know, there's one image in particular that I thought was really just, this really stayed with me, just this wide shot involving one of the guys and a mine. I think the movie's worth seeing, even if, you know, some of the screenwriting is a little bit, it can be a little overdone, but, I think it's an effective film and worth seeing.
Okay. It's at the Landmark Century Center, which is at Clark and Diversey in Chicago, Land of Mine. Okay. Hang on, you guys. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Eric Childress, Colin Suter here, and we've got new movies to talk about right here on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Let's take a break here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower here till 5 a.m. It is the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. My dad will be calling in because it's Monday, and we're going to hear a joke. And we're going to talk about long movies that are worth your time. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. But right now we're in the middle of the movie reviews for a Monday morning. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me every Monday. We will also talk box office with Eric a little bit later on as well. But let's get back to it. Here's Eric.
Hello.
Hello. And here's Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about Groundhog. I'm sorry, Before I Fall.
There we go. Pretty much. Really quickly, though, you know what? I do want to mention this before I get into this movie. Last week, there was also this documentary called Kedi.
Oh, all right.
About a stray cats in Istanbul.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. I wanted to see that.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful documentary, especially if you're a cat person. It's
yeah.
It's basically these stray cats that are all over Istanbul and these people who look after them.
And it's also like each cat, I've seen the trailer for it, and each cat has like a name because of their personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic.
It looks great. I mean, and I wanted to mention that because I know you're a cat person. Right. And the movie just expanded to a couple more art houses. It's at the Music Box, it's at the Landmark Renaissance out in Highland Park, and it's at the River East.
So oh, great.
Mention that.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you did. It's called Kedi. I've seen the trailer for it. And of course, Esmeralda's the one who sent me the trailer because we're both like cat idiots. And we send each other cat videos all the time. So.
My cat actually watched it.
My cat
actually like sat up and noticed their cats on the screen and actually like kept their head on the fixated on the screen the whole time.
All right,
like,
very
never
cool.
Never done that before. So all right.
Okay.
So Before I Fall. So this is a teen drama about a girl who goes out one night with her friends to a party, and she's part of this clique of mean girls, and she's a little on the mean side herself. And when she's at this party with them one night, and they leave, and they all get killed in a car wreck on the way home, but she wakes up the next morning and finds herself in a situation where she is stuck on the same day in February.
And
you think they could have picked a different month at least?
I mean, really. And she is, or maybe they're just saying, "Eh, let's just own up to it."
Put it a leap year at least.
Yeah. But she's forced to live that day over and over and over again. And she has to use this as a way of figuring out her death and how to prevent it and how to prevent her friends from getting into the car and, you know, steer the course of the day so this tragedy doesn't happen. And but she also learns, you know, in the process of trying to make all this stuff not happen, she also learns more about a guy who has a crush on her, a guy she has a crush on, and an outsider who this other girl who she has picked on along with her friends, and how maybe she should change her overall behavior. So, yeah, the comparisons to Groundhog Day are inevitable. It's not the first movie since Groundhog Day to use the formula. Edge of Tomorrow was that, too. But this is a teen drama that's kind of using that formula to explore the idea of, you know, redemption, much in the same way Groundhog did, but also about, you know, how are you going to be remembered when you die? I think that's an interesting idea, and I certainly think that's a theme worth exploring, and I think that's a really good thing for teenagers to see. I'm glad there is a movie, an earnest, you know, drama that is about that for teenagers to go see, because that's, you know, I think this is, among other things, an anti-bullying film. The problem with it is that that gimmick of reliving the same day over and over again just doesn't really work as a storytelling device to get there. It's really awkward. The ending is, it kind of leaves more questions than answers. And I think there's just the way the movie goes about the Groundhog Day aspect of it, it looks just a little too familiar, you know, for, you know, how it goes about telling its story. It kind of goes by those same beats. And so maybe, you know, it's appropriate. It's Groundhog Day. We've been here before. But no, this is a movie that is kind of doesn't really know what else to do with that formula. And so I just think it was the wrong choice to try and use it to get to that theme. And there's also just some bad screenwriting here at times. You know, I think the outsider character, the girl, the way they have her dressed is just so overdone. You know, they got her in rags and everything. Her hair is all ratty, and it just looks like so dad after school special kind of thing, which is too bad, because I think the cast here is actually very good. The main actress here, Zoe Deutsch, I think is really good. I think I'd like to see her in more films.
Oh, she's good, man. She was in, I didn't see this movie, but she was in the Linkletter, Everybody Wants Some. She's Leia Thompson and Howard Deutsch's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, now I can definitely see the resemblance there. So there's interesting things in the film. I mean, I think there's some really good, well-directed scenes. I mean, scene for scene, it's not that bad of a film. But it's just the overall conceit, you know, by the end is a little, just kind of leaves me wanting to know more, but also just thinking that this little kind of narrative device just didn't really work out this time.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, I mean, you know, this is Groundhog Day. And I understand that Edge of Tomorrow, you know, used the same sort of thing, but it didn't bother me because that movie rules.
Right.
So I don't know. But I like that, you know, I really like Zoe Deutsch a lot. And I think she's pretty cool. And I don't know. Now, this is based, I guess, on a novel. Is this it was a bestseller or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you can kind of tell, you know, that this is there, that that this has been around for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And I want to mention before
I'd be curious to hear what its target audience thinks of it, though.
Like the teenagers that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be very curious to hear their thoughts on it.
Well,
if they liked it or not.
We'll talk about the box office later, but Eric, it didn't make a lot of money over the weekend.
No, it didn't do very well at all.
Yeah, so we'll see. I want to mention before we break, there's a movie that came out with a great cast, headed by Anna Kendrick, called Table 19, which is about a group of misfits who are all sat at one table at a wedding reception off in the corner because nobody likes them. It's more than that, but it's a great cast, and it's the second movie with Stephen Merchant that features Stephen Merchant this weekend. Now, Eric, what do you know? But was Table 19? I have a feeling that this one was delayed.
I think it was supposed to open originally in January. Mm-hmm. It's a Fox Searchlight production, so it's not didn't get a big, huge, wide release. So that's why it didn't appear in the top 10 at all.
Right.
And, I mean, I haven't even seen an advertisement anywhere for it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the trailer for it a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
And a couple of commercials here and there. But Anna Kendrick did do the late night shows.
Oh, okay.
She did do the circuit on the late night shows. So I did see her get interviewed a couple of times for it. So, but I was just interested because I really like the cast a lot. And I think the idea is interesting. So that's out there, too, Table 19. Not a lot of people saw it. All right, we got a break.
Speaking as a wedding videographer, I've been at that table so much
time. Well, we got to get your perspective on that movie then, Colin.
I know, right? I have not seen it. I'm very interested.
Okay. All right, we got a break here. Eric and Colin are here. We got a break for the news when we come back. A couple more movies to review. And then we'll talk box office with Eric on 720 WGN news after this. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich following this show with the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran has your morning drive starting at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. It's Monday morning. We're in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. We'll talk box office, and it being Monday means that we will also get a joke from my dad. All coming up. We're also going to talk about long movies that are worth the watch. That'll all be coming up a little bit later on. But here we are talking about the movies. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week. Here's Eric and here's Colin. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. So I will handle this one. I'm assuming that neither of you saw The Institute.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Shack.
No, I didn't see The Shack. The Shack was the other big release this week. But was it that Eric? It's a faith-based movie, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't see it either.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Yeah. And Octavia Spencer hosted. She's in it, and she hosted SNL. And it was a terrible episode, by the way.
It was awful.
Oh my God. I laughed at. I laughed at like two things. The Zootopia takeoff thing because Melissa Villaseñor was unbelievable.
Terrific. Yeah.
So that whole setup was actually pretty funny. When she did Kate McKinnon, I swear to God, I almost fell off my couch.
And Kristen Wiig.
Oh, Kristen Wiig too. She's great, man. I mean, she's they're not using her. They've used her a couple of the last time that she had a great breakout scene sketch was when Aziz Ansari
hosted. Bedroom scene.
Yeah, and it was again killed.
Mm-hmm.
Her Owen Wilson is magnificent too. It's just so great. Anyway, terrible. But Octavia Spencer is in The Shack, and we'll talk more about that when we get to the box office. But no, The Institute. You guys familiar with this one?
Familiar with it.
All right. It stars and is
cool. Coin Institute.
It's. I'm sorry.
Nothing.
Okay. It's
a two joke.
Oh yeah, there you go. I should have said it with you.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, I was saying we're familiar with it. Can't believe we knew jokes from Airplane 2.
Of course we do.
So it stars and is co-directed by James Franco. And it takes place like in the late 1800s in Baltimore. And this girl is suffering from grief because her parents died. So her husband and other folks recommend that she check into this institute called the Rosewood Institute. It's always trusting when the person that convinces you to go to this institute is played by Eric Roberts. That's always there's a warning sign right there. If Eric Roberts is trying to help you with your mental stability, that's not good.
How did you not stop the movie right there?
Because it's the first 2 minutes of the movie, Eric.
Oh, exactly.
So anyway, you can see this. It's playing in Barrington if you want to go to Barrington to see it. It's also playing on VOD, which is how I saw it. Very late on Friday night. I watched it like 3 o'clock in the morning Friday night. So she goes in and this is the second movie in like 3 weeks that has been about someone who goes to a weird institute. Except this is an hour shorter than the other one. So the woman goes, she goes there and there's weird things happening, weird experiments, and it's all overseen by by James Franco, who plays this doctor who's doing these weird experiments. And every single shot, every single time they cut to him in the movie, I laughed. Worst fake mustache ever. Like one of those, you know, early 19th century handlebar stupid mustaches. And he just, okay, here's the thing about this movie. It's not good. It's really bad. There are a lot of other people who make cameos, and for some reason Tim Blake Nelson is in this. Pamela Anderson is in it. There are weird cameos here and there. And then there's Franco. Now, I don't know what the motivation was for him to make this movie. I don't know if he wanted to make a real life room of his own before he did The Disaster Artist. It's not called The Disaster Artist, right? It's called The Masterpiece, right?
No, it's been changed back to The Disaster Artist.
Oh, it is. Okay, so it's The Disaster. Okay, anyway, so I don't know if he just wanted to have a personal experience of being a loon co-star director for real. I don't know if this is just because you know James Franco. It's like maybe this is like an art thing, you know, like he's pulling a Shia LaBeouf and he's doing some sort of like weird, I'm going to make a terrible movie and be the director and be one of the stars of it before I make a document or before I make a film about the making of a terrible movie. So, I mean, that might be the motivation because James Franco's nuts. But it's very strange. This is the only way that I can describe this movie, The Institute. I just picture James Franco at his house, the one that got destroyed and This Is the End. I just picture James Franco in his house. He just read a couple of short stories by Poe. He blows a ton of weed, passes out in front of the TV while watching Suspiria. That's what I think is the result. So that's the only thing I can think of. He was really high or drunk, had Suspiria on the TV, fell asleep on the couch, kind of woke up, went back to sleep, woke up, went back to sleep while Suspiria was playing, and then he made this thing. So that's the only kind of weird explanation I have for it, and it was just some sort of like real life, I want to make the room of my own. It's certainly not boring, and it's wacky enough to, you know, to watch at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, which is what I did. But it's an odd little thing that James Franco obviously just put together, and it's just weird. So there you go. I don't know. I think I've made it sound intriguing. I'm not really sure, but
no, I'm good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right, Eric. Why don't you tell us about Logan?
Okay. Well, this is the next in the evolution, if you will, of the Wolverine character. The year is 2029, and it seems that the ongoing war that we've heard between the mutants and the humans seems to have come to some sort of finality. At the very least, mutants don't seem to exist except in, you know, fits and spurts around the world these days. Logan has grown older. The adamantium that's been placed inside his body has slowly started to poison him and started to affect his healing powers. So that's why, you know, the guy that never ages all of a sudden seems like an old man in this movie. And with nothing much to fight for, he's reduced to being a limo driver. And when he's not doing that, taking care of an ailing Professor X, played by Patrick Stewart again, who is suffering bouts of seizures that could have enormous effect on the world if they grow any worse. Stephen Merchant, who you mentioned earlier, plays one of the few surviving mutants that's also living in this kind of abandoned warehouse across the border. And Logan is contacted by a woman who wants to hire him to escort her, she calls her daughter, basically to this place called Eden, which is apparently a place where the remaining mutants have forged, you know, a little bit of a home for themselves. He's very reluctant to take the job, but when some mercenaries show up looking not so much for him, but for this young girl, all hell breaks loose, and he sort of forced to go on the run with Professor X and the girl until he can get away from the mercenaries or get her to this place that may or may not exist. So you have, you know, what is essentially a road movie, basically, much different in tone than any of the previous X-Men movies, because this is the first one to be rated R. After the success of Deadpool last year, Fox basically got the stones to say, well, hey, we made a lot of money doing it. Maybe we can actually do a Wolverine movie that really kind of plays into the stuff in the comics that the real fans of this character have been thriving for years. And this is something that Jackman and Mangold have talked about since they made the last standalone movie, The Wolverine, a few years ago, which was also good. But this one, it exceeds any expectations you might have for any of the X-Men movies. It is, without question, the best of the bunch. The R rating helps that to an extent, because it allows them a lot more freedom to really tap into the sort of the darker elements of this character, and really, you know, understand that a guy that has large metal claws protruding from his knuckles is going to cause some really horrific damage from time to time. And boy, do you see some horrific damage from time to time in this movie. You're not even 3 minutes in, and there are limbs hacked off and spikes through skulls and stuff. And it is brutal, but it all fits into this greater narrative about this, you know, this hardened character who's always been hardened. That's, you know, that's one of the things that's made him so interesting over the years. And really, it plays into things in from other comic book stories that we've kind of played around with in other movies, like the whole idea of, you know, getting too close to characters puts them in danger. We really see that come to fruition in this movie in a really dark way. But it also taps into a greater emotionality, something that we've never experienced in any of the X-Men movies. This movie absolutely stands apart. And as we said, with at the very least, the one consistent throughout all these X-Men movies has been Hugh Jackman. And Hugh Jackman, who basically his career was basically his movie career, at least, was started with this character, and he's committed to it in a way that, you know, we've seen over time. You know, he's always going to be associated with this character. He's a great actor regardless, but what he's brought to this character is what's going to make him, you know, so memorable. He's great. Stewart's great. The girl's great. The villains, I think, are solid and dark. And like I said, there's a great emotional payoff to this movie. The action is terrific. There's a lot of Fury Road influence in this movie that I saw quite a bit of. That's always very welcome if you can pull it off. And this is, so far, it's my favorite movie of the year.
Okay. All right, Colin and Eric, hang on, okay? That's Eric's very positive review of the movie Logan. We'll find out what Colin thinks and what I think of Logan as well after we take a break here. And coming up, we'll talk about the box office with Eric as well. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Monday morning movie reviews continue. We'll talk box office in a little bit as well. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning. Let's get back to the reviews here. Eric and Colin, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric told us about Logan and gave us his very positive review. Colin, what did you think of Logan?
Also a very positive review from me. And likewise, my favorite film of the year so far, too. Granted, it's only March, but, you know, for me, saying that a comic book movie is the best film of the year so far, I think is kind of significant.
Yeah, you've kind of had it with the comic book genre and don't get as excited as a lot of other people do.
Not really, mainly just because they've kind of stuck to this formula over the years, and it's the same film over and over again. And it's just so great to see one that is just shunning the formula completely, just on a stylistic level. You know, it's no big, grand opening credit scene. There's no cheesy cameo by Stan Lee. You know, no post-credit cookie that, you know.
And you know what? I had heard that they added one after the screening. after the critic screening of it, but I stayed through the whole movie, and there is indeed no postscript.
Yeah,
on it.
Yeah, just a rumor.
Yeah. It's not there, folks, so you don't have to say through the credits. I think some of the people at the theater should have known ahead of time because three quarters of the theater was still there. And when the credits ended, they were like, oh! And as I was walking out of the theater, one of the ushers who was coming in with the, you know, rolling in the garbage can to clean up the theater, he was talking to the other usher. And as we're walking out, one of the ushers says to the other, he's like, man, oh, man, every time I see these people get disappointed at this point, it makes me sad. So I guess that was going on at every screening.
Yeah, well, we've all been conditioned now.
Right.
Or, you know, most of us have been conditioned now to stay in our seats. And I did anyway. You know, usually at these movies, when the credits start rolling, I just leave. I'm like, I don't care. Whatever that post-credits cookie is, it's going to mean something to certain people, but it's not going to mean anything to me.
Right.
And I'm not going to remember it years down the road when the next Thor movie comes out or whatever.
Right.
This is a really great film, a really great standalone comic book film. And I say standalone, I know it's the third part of, you know, the Wolverine trilogy, but I had no memory of the past two. Like, I had no idea, you know, I just couldn't remember anything from the last two Wolverine movies. They didn't stand out to me at all. So I came into this thing, I think, pretty cold. But everything Eric said is true. You know, everybody is great in it. All the stuff with this kid who doesn't say anything throughout much of the film until, like, the later scenes is handled really well. It never crosses the line into, you know, schmaltz or finally warming up to her and everything like that. It never feels disingenuous or anything. It feels very real. I like that the futuristic stuff isn't overdone. I like seeing the self-driving semi trucks in the background. I think it was pretty neat, but
yeah.
You know, they never go too far into the futuristic thing. I think Stewart is tremendous in this movie, and I love that this is a gritty, raw, rated R film that doesn't overdo with special effects or anything like that. It's a movie that really just completely shattered my expectations, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, well, okay, so all three of us have our favorite movie of the year so far. I know it's only March, but yeah, this is a great movie. And as you know, as I posted on my Facebook page after I saw it, I just posted, well, Spider-Man 2 is no longer my favorite comic book movie of all time, because this is. And, you know, I can take it or, you know, leave the comic book thing. As you guys know, I never read comic books. I never got into it. I've seen all the comic book movies, and there are some that I really love and some that I don't. And, you know, there are certain parts of the comic book genre that I find kind of annoying. This movie is way, way above the norm in terms of, like, your comic book movies. There's a reason why there are references, and there's a sequence in the movie where they watch Shane. That's not lost on Mangold or anybody else as to why that's in there. The performances in this movie are great, and I honestly think that there should be serious consideration for both Jackman and Stewart at the end of the year for the Oscars. I really do. I think they're that good, and there's real consequence to the violence, and that's kind of what this movie is about. Is about living with this curse. You know, you might be a superhero, but you know, it's just not, it's not, it's just, you know, there's a weight to it. There's real stakes here. There's a lot of stuff at stake in this movie. And emotionally, it's really grounded. I cried, and I thought the action sequences were brilliant. There are incredible, crazy fight scenes in it. And there's a car crash sequence or a car scene where Jackman's trying to get away, but he like has a giant barbed wire fence attached to the front of the car that's just very imaginative and really well done. Mangold has a great eye for action. And I thought it was really great. A huge payoff for anybody who is a fan of these movies, especially the character of Wolverine. It has a whole different tone to it. And there are great surprises in the movie. And as you mentioned, the villains, I thought Boyd Holbrook was great. And you just got to love Richard E. Grant. And anytime you have like a guy like Richard E. Grant playing a mad scientist, that's always good. And like the big reveal of like the main villain that happens late in the film is shocking and amazing and a great way. And there are also like, there are also like a group of kids in this movie that kick serious ass, in addition to Daphne Keene, who is an unbelievable find. This is just great all from top to bottom. It is a great movie. It feels more like a Western than a comic book movie, and it's a road movie, and you guys mentioned Fury Road. There's a little bit of that in there, too. But I really think that this is a wholly original film and unlike any comic book movie I've ever seen. And I think it's unlike any comic book movie that's ever been made. And it makes sense that they don't have the postscript cookie at the end because this is a different kind of thing altogether. So I loved it. So that's all three of us kind of liked it.
Yeah. How about that?
It's so great. It's so great. So anyway, that's Logan. It made a lot of money over the weekend. And Eric, you and I will talk about that in a second. Next week, another movie that I can't wait to see. You know, you follow up Logan with a King Kong movie. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Kong Skull Island opens next week. And My Life is a Zucchini, which was nominated for animated film, also opens. Anything else? Those are the big ones, right?
Those are the big ones, yeah.
Right. Okay, Kong Skull Island. We'll talk about that one next week as well. Colin, thanks, man.
All righty.
All right, take care. All right, there's Colin. Eric, hang on.
Uh-huh.
We got box office to talk about, and we'll talk a little bit about the fact that you are going to be at South by Southwest next week.
Yes.
Okay, that's all coming up. News is up next on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning, jokey time. Also, we're going to talk about long movies that are worth the watch. Great, great long movies. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We just finished up our movie reviews with the big movie this week, Logan, getting three absolute raves from Colin and Eric and myself. And we welcome Eric back. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
All right. So, Logan. $85.3 million. Is that what people were estimating?
I think that exceeded expectations. I think they were lowballing this one because, I mean, the X-Men movies, while they've done well, these have not been like your Iron Man in, you know, that Marvel universe.
Right. The last one, the Apocalypse, was a disappointment, wasn't it?
It was a disappointment, certainly.
As a film.
Basically.
Yeah.
But, it didn't do great here in the States, but I think a lot because of the reviews. But it did okay. It did well enough worldwide that it still made a profit. Days of Future Past made the most worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, still to this day, the highest grossing X-Men movie in the States is the Brett Ratner one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, believe it or not. I mean, First Class only did like 140-some million. Days of Future Past did very well. The Wolverine only did like 132 million.
And that's not the Origins one, the good one, right?
Good one,
yeah.
Right. I mean, the Origins one opened to about what Logan opened. It opened to a little bit less than Logan. I think that's why they made it 85.3.
Yeah.
They're trying to beat that number at least.
Yeah.
But it's so I think they were sort of lowballing this. Some people were saying like mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, an $85 million opening and it did another $152 million worldwide. And remarkably, their budget for this still shocked me. How much do you think the budget for this movie is?
About 80?
97.
It was 97.
97 before P&A costs, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, your Captain America movies are veering around the $150-$200 million range.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you see the film, that's why I said 80.
Yeah.
Because there's not a ton of special effects in it.
Right.
There are no, you know, there's always usually a big giant CGI creature.
Yeah, exactly.
That comes out and they destroy tons of buildings. That stuff doesn't happen in this movie.
No, it's very lo-fi. And,
oh, yeah, and it's most of it
down on this one. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, the Bryan Singer movies, those budgets get escalated.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
So to keep this at a $97 million, I mean, this thing is going to be in profit before next weekend.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. And, I mean, most of the action takes place either in a desert or in a forest.
Right.
So there's no big cities or anything to wipe out, you know, buildings and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's so good. Such a great movie. So yeah. $85 million, does it look like it's going to stay there next week? There's a Kong. There's Kong.
First place, I'm kind of curious to see what Kong's going to do.
Yeah.
Next week. I'm not pegging Kong to do massive business, but I've been hearing some good word of mouth so far. Good or some good reviews
yeah.
on the film.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking like high 40s, low 50s for Kong. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe it's a tough call.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah.
Week. Yeah. Now, boy, oh boy, look at this. Number two, Get Out, 26.1 million, bringing its total up to almost 76 million in 2 weeks. Wow.
Yeah, and I don't know if people really appreciate this, what kind of number this really is, because as we all know, horror movies tend to have a solid opening weekend and then drop off sharply.
Yeah.
Okay, granted, this is not your atypical horror movie, but if we're going to keep it in at least that perspective, there are only a handful of horror movies that have ever, at least since like the late 90s, have dropped this lightly in the second weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like, I mean, like The Ring, you know, The Ring, the remake, only opened like $15 million and then actually went up the following weekend because the word of mouth was so good. The Sixth Sense only dropped 3% in its second weekend. And then this one dropped 22%. This is basically in that territory.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, there are a couple other movies like Paranormal Activity, Devil's Advocate that had small drops, but they had smaller openings. This thing, like on Sunday, was expected to do just under $31 million. It did over $33 million. They lowballed the estimate for the weekend last weekend, and then it's been climbing all week, and then it drops 22% with Logan opening this weekend.
Yeah,
it's a remarkable number, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, Blumhouse is having one hell of a year between this and Split.
Yeah,
and I mean, again, this is a very small budget movie. Get Out. This thing is a monster hit.
Yeah, huge. And deservedly so. Another great movie.
Yeah.
Okay, and then number three, The Shack, $16.1 million. This is did it tap into the audience that it wanted?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it opened to a little bit better than Miracles from Heaven, not as much as Heaven is for Real. I mean, this is the crowd you're looking at, and
yeah.
Lionsgate released it, so it's not just one of these independent faith-based studios. Here's the funny thing. Miracles from Heaven and what was the other one? Heaven is for Real.
Yeah.
Both opened on Wednesdays when they were released. And The Shack waited until Friday to be released on the week of Wednesday.
It could have been Ash Wednesday. Could have opened it on Ash Wednesday.
Yes. Who dropped the ball and didn't open this movie on Ash Wednesday?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's
good. Could have got your ashes and gone to see The Shack.
Right, right, right.
Which, from what I understand, Octavia Spencer, one of her first acts of, I think she plays God in the movie, or some version of God.
Uh-huh.
This is true. I've been told that one of the first things she does to Sam Worthington is offer him a pie.
Oh, come on.
I swear to God.
And I hope Sam Worthington said no.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Sessions didn't.
I know. That was one of the best parts of SNL was that cold open.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. All right, so that's The Shack. And will that sustain anything, or have we seen the most?
Well, I mean, we're in Lent.
Yeah.
So that's exactly when Miracles from Heaven and Heaven is for Real made all their money.
Right.
I mean, you're talking 90 million, 60 million. So I don't know if Shaq the Shaq. I was like Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
The Shack.
I don't know if Kazam going to make that kind of money.
Wait, it's already beaten Kazam.
Oh, it has. Okay.
But I don't know how well it's going to maintain it. But it might just kind of slyly make its money.
Okay.
A few weeks.
All right. Number four, the Lego Batman movie, $11 million, bringing its total up to $148.6 million. How's that doing?
Not as good as the first Lego movie. I wouldn't call it a. I mean, it's certainly not a complete disappointment. It's a money maker, but it's about $60 million behind the pace of the Lego movie, and it's not going to do $200 million. Which I think some at Warner Brothers are kind of going, shaking their heads, going, "Why didn't this do better?"
Yeah. Okay. Number five, Before I Fall, $4.9 million. Not a lot of people went to go see that.
Yeah, I mean, with a $5 million budget, it's not really going to break the bank, but. This is Open Road Films, and they to date have still never made a movie over like reached 65 million. So, you know, and they just had that movie Collide, that Nicholas Hoult movie that opened and nobody knew about a couple weeks ago.
Right.
they're making movies right now, and the only thing they have on the horizon that might, I don't think it's going to save the company, but I think this is a company in free fall right now.
Yeah.
And if you're pinning your hopes on the Nut Job 2, you may want to think about, you know, trying another business.
Right. Six, John Wick Chapter 2, 4.7, bringing its total up to almost $83 million. That's a solid hit.
Yeah, this is a hit for Lionsgate. Not a huge hit, but it's going to be enough to probably get you a Chapter 3, and that's all people really need.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Number seven, this thing is a monster. Hidden Figures, $3.8 million, $158.7 million.
This movie, Fox released this movie, and didn't win anything at the Oscars, but who cares? It's making money hand over fist. This movie has grossed more than three of the X-Men movies.
Oh, my God.
Think about that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Number eight is the ponytail Chinese movie. that referred to as Jimmy Kimmel.
That's right.
The Great Wall, $3.5 million, bringing its total to the $41.2 million. Bomb?
Yes, sir. It's over $269 million internationally, and add that to the $41 million it's made here in the States. But this is a gigantic production. And right now, I mean, if you stop making money right now, Universal probably loses, or whoever puts money into this thing loses about $100 million.
Oof.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it'll probably make a little bit more money, but not a lot more.
Yeah. Okay. 50 Shades Darker is at number nine, $3.4 million, $109.9 million total. That's a lot less than the first one, right?
The first one did like 160, 170,
yeah.
I think, when all is said and done. So, I mean, I guess so, but it made its $100 million, and it's actually, to date, is the highest grossing film worldwide of the year so far.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah.
Wow.
You know what second is?
No, what?
XXX3.
No, you're kidding.
Yeah.
They love that in Europe, huh?
Apparently, they're not sick of Vin Diesel over there.
No. Wow. Okay. I think even Vin Diesel is sick of Vin Diesel at this point. And number 10, La La Land, $2.9 million, bringing its total up to $145.6 million. And if obviously, because of the Oscars, it got a little bit of a boost.
Yeah, yeah. And the Lionsgate has nothing to be upset about. I mean, this is made over $375 million worldwide, or at least it will in the next couple of days. It's a fantastic hit for them. They got six Oscars out of it. Almost got Best Picture, it's a terrific hit for them.
Big hit, and did Moonlight's numbers go up? Did it get a boost from last week?
Yeah, Moonlight was released into like 1,500 theaters this weekend to capitalize on the Best Picture win, and made like another $2.5 million.
Oh.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's available on Blu-ray and DVD now,
right.
So if you don't want to go out, you can pick it up there.
Right.
So it's made over $25 million, and, you know, not bad for a $1.5 million budgeted film.
Right. Okay. All right, well, that's your big winner, obviously, is Logan. We'll keep an eye on that. And again, as we mentioned earlier, Eric, the big thing is going to be Logan or Kong next week.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think word of mouth on Logan's going to be great, but I think... I don't know what those Kong numbers are going to be. I'm really curious about that.
I don't know. I mean, I have been waiting for this movie since they announced it. You know. And by the way, did you see the latest trailer for War of the Planet of the Apes?
No. If there's a new one, I haven't seen it.
There's a new one. It's attached to Logan because I know you saw Logan at a screening.
Right.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Did Reeves direct this one too?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay.
Man. And Woody Harrelson's the villain.
Yes.
Oh, man. It looks so awesome.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that.
Oh, yeah. All right. So if you go see Logan again, that's the trailer you get to see. It's attached to it. Now, was the Deadpool thing attached to it when you saw it?
No.
Oh!
No, so you got to see the Superman thing
at
the beginning?
Yeah. That's right at the beginning of Logan now.
Yeah. No, I did not. We did not see
You know
that.
What? Maybe that's when they added the running time.
Is it a trailer or is it like
Logan? You know how AMC goes, now let's start the movie after the trailers are over? It's after that.
Oh.
It's after before the Fox logo comes up.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
That's
then.
It then. That's exactly what it is. It's not what they attach something at the end, they attach something at the beginning. That's what it is. So anyway, it's actually pretty funny. The Deadpool thing, pretty funny. And I didn't like the first movie.
Well, I'm glad they did add that at the beginning, because as we talked about at the screening, that, and because there were these rumors, as we mentioned, and the rumors were that Deadpool is somehow going to make an appearance, because, you know, he's the reason,
right,
why R-rated and all this blah blah blah.
Right, right.
But it would have been, I thought it would have been, with the, well, I don't want to get into too much, but it would have been so inappropriate.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And when it started, I thought it was the film. You know what I mean? And when it started, and then I was like, well, this can't be, you know, but then as it went on, you know, and it's all F-bombs and everything, you know, so it's like, and it's not a trailer. It's just a scene. It's a wacky bit, and it's all F-bombs.
It was deleted from the original movie.
Is that right?
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't think they've even started filming anything on Deadpool 2 yet.
Okay.
I mean, I think they just found a director a couple weeks ago.
Oh, all right. All right. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, it's there now. It's at the beginning of Logan, so.
There you go.
All right, man. All right, Eric, we'll talk to you next week from South by Southwest.
Yes, I will be there. I will, on Sunday night, I will probably have just seen The Disaster Artist.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, we got to get your review of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric, thanks, man.
Sure thing.
All right, there you go. Eric Childress and Colin Suter, Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we'll do it again next week. We got a break here for weather and traffic, and I got your weather right here. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday morning. That means in a little bit my dad will be calling to tell a joke, because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And we're going to talk about long movies that are worth your time, like really great long movies. You know, when you see the running time of a movie, sometimes you go, oh, boy. And lately, there's been a lot of long movies. It seems to be a trend that's the running time in movies has increased over the past bunch of years. And sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. So we'll talk about the best long movies, and you can join us at 312-981-7200. Now, Esmeralda, you saw Logan over the weekend.
I did.
What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I really liked it. I cried, too.
I did. Oh,
so
man.
Did he.
Did he?
How can you not? We're very emotional people.
How can you not?
Yeah. No, it was a tearjerker.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
At one point.
Great movie. And my, it is, you know, because I adore Spider-Man, too. That it was my favorite comic book movie up until Saturday.
Is that the one with
Doc Ock?
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. The second one that Sam Raimi directed. Yeah. And now, Dan, you haven't seen Logan yet.
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Man, you gotta.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, based upon all your reviews.
Ridiculous. It's so good. It's just so ridiculously good. And I you know, and I know it's weird. Has anybody ever been nominated for an Academy Award for doing a superhero movie? Because I really think Jackman and Stewart are unbelievable. Like, seriously, like great, great acting in the movie.
I don't think anybody has.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of anything. I mean, now, you know, Lord of the Rings isn't a comic book movie, and I know that McKellen was nominated for that, for playing Gandalf. But I think, like, in terms of comic book movies, let's see, now, Christopher Reeve wasn't nominated for Superman. Oh, wait, Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger won for the Dark Knight. So, yeah. All right. So see Logan. Now, you saw it in the IMAX.
I did. I didn't get it.
It's a bigger screen. If you saw it in IMAX, it's a bigger screen.
I didn't think it was. Compared, like, from what I remember, regular screens, it didn't seem that amazing.
It is bigger. It is bigger.
It's not like... At least where we were, it was. It's not like the Navy Pier big.
No, it's not. No, the Navy Pier big is that IMAX is a much bigger screen,
which I would have been into.
Yeah,
but this looked just like a regular screen. I'm like, why am I paying more?
It's a bigger screen. It is. Trust me on that. Because the film is bigger, the actual stock of the film is much bigger, and it's a bigger screen, and the sound is a lot louder.
Eh.
Well, maybe you.
I would have been fine seeing it.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it in IMAX.
Regular.
I saw it on the regular screen, and
it was
fine.
For some reason, hell bent.
Well,
I'm
seeing Kong in IMAX 3D.
I could understand that.
I'm going.
He's a big old, you know.
He's an ape, you know, smashing helicopters and killing people.
Right.
I happen to love King Kong movies, and I'm very, very excited about this one. And so I'm going to do the whole IMAX 3D, and just sit in the front row and cry.
Is that going to freak you out? Not freak you out, but in terms of...
No, I'm not going to sit in the
like
front
height.
Row. I, of, uh, uh, of like, for IMAX, you got to sit towards the back.
No, but I mean, because there's so much, I mean, because he's a big, big ape, so there's going to be a lot of, like,
I'm
high up in the sky
shots. I'll be okay, I think. We'll see. Hey, if I made it through the walk, you know.
That's true, but just barely, right?
Yeah, just barely. All right. Okay, we got a break. When we come back, we get the news, and after the news, the best long movies that are worth your time. What are your favorite long movies? 312-981-7200.